Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my guest today is Grace O'Donnell, and she is the COO of Leaders Press, and she joins us to discuss how to make a USA Today and Wall Street Journal best-selling book and why we should have a book. Now, Grace is an interviewer and a storyteller, and I love storytellers, who has been crafting stories for over 10 years as an Irish, and this is her description, as an Irish traveling entrepreneur filmmaking lady. We're going to delve into that a bit. It's a terrific story. So to date with Leaders Press, she has developed over a dozen books, all of which are bestsellers on Amazon, and she has worked with over 100 authors, and she recently conducted interviews for Areva Martin, who is an award-winning civil rights attorney and talk show host. And thank you for sending that book to me, by the way. It's on my desk. Hans Kierstedt, who is a renowned stem cell researcher, and Steve, I don't know if I can pronounce his name, Ferriaria. You're going to have to tell me what that is. And he is a transport mogul. How do you pronounce his name?
Ferreira.
I wasn't even close. Sorry about that. So listen in as we learn and how she shares with us how you can share your wisdom and your life experiences with the world, create a lead generator and lead conversation tool, build further authority, and best of all, leave a legacy. Grace, good morning. Welcome to the podcast. If I'm not mistaken, you're calling in today from Lisbon, Portugal, but you were born in Ireland. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, lovely sunny Lisbon. It's so nice to be here. By the way, it's so funny. I forgot that I wrote that introduction. You know, it's been a while. And it's so nice to hear it back. I was like, oh, look at all that. Look at those things I've done. Is that a normal reaction? Are people usually like, oh, okay.
Well, when we had our pre-interview, I was scribbling like mad going, oh, she sounds fun. You've got the storytellers are the best. I mean, let's face it. Everything we know from history is storytelling. It's been handed down. Some of it's baloney. Mm-hmm. It's been lost. Some of it's true. But it's all fascinating. And books, you know, to me, listen, I read constantly. I'm a voracious reader. Mm-hmm. My mom said when I was a kid, I would read the backs of cereal boxes. I hate cereal. I don't eat breakfast. I don't eat cereal. But if it had print on it, I was in it. My face was right there reading it.
Oh.
So it's good to have you here to talk about books.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, it's funny that you describe me as fun. I like to think that I make things like writing a book and publishing it quite fun. And I remember I was doing an escape room with my friend, you know, an escape room, like where you have to figure out the puzzles to get out. Do you know this?
No. Go ahead and tell us.
Oh, an escape room. Like, there's just a bunch of puzzles, and you have to figure them out. And she did this social media, and she posted about everyone who did it. And she, for everyone else, she said, they solved in record time. They were really smart. And then she came to me and my friend, and she was like, they were very fun and had a good time. And I thought that was both such a nice compliment and insult at the same time. He was like, they were fast. They were smart, but they did laugh a lot. I think you should be having fun when you do something like tell a story or invite people into your world. So, yeah.
Exactly. And listen, it is said, Grace, that we all have at least one book in us, but writing, editing, packaging, marketing, that's not fun. It can be incredibly daunting just to think about it. And listen, I've got a book. I've got more than one book in me. I know I do. What I have oftentimes, though, is what I have to call an epic blank page. The minute I sit down, I just go, oh, what the heck? And off I go. I go wash dishes, or, you know, do something that makes sense. It's difficult, isn't it? So making it fun, I think, can only help the mindset.
That's so interesting. And yeah, I think that's so common. That's why, I think as a starting point, what everyone should do is create an outline, because then you can just scribble about a particular section that you know you want included in the book, even if, you know, you're not feeling the muse or the inspiration. And, like, the way to write a good outline is just to kind of brain dump absolutely every idea you want to include in your book, and then just pick out the really core ones that center on that central theme or those central three goals for why you're writing your book. And yeah, that, I don't know, I think that is my biggest tip for those struggling with the blank page. Or, like, maybe talk to a friend about it. Some people prefer the written word. And, like, maybe just record your chat with a friend and you realize, oh, I actually have a lot to say. Because I think we can get daunted by that blank page, right?
Oh, it scares the heck out of me. And listen, I'm a social media marketing person. I build websites. I write all day long for other people. I'm brilliant in that arena. Mm-hmm. Just ask me. I'll tell you, I'm brilliant. But when it comes to my own stuff, I'm like, oh, crap. Off we go. But what you're describing is that there is some logic to starting the book. So when you're brain dumping or talking with a friend, at some point you have to pick all that out and then create a logical path, don't you? And I think that's what stops a lot of people as well. Like, but this is important. I don't know where it goes. You know, what happens when people give you this brain dump and you're like, okay, we got it. We can handle it. Here's where we need to go.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a really good point that it really trips people up because it seems overwhelming, especially because my favorite writer, William Goldman, he always said that, like, what makes a really great screenwriter is not, like, zippy dialogue. Like, it's not the things you think or the things that we remember, but it's actually just structure. That if you can't get, like, I mean, I think we all know that everything needs a beginning, middle, and end, but what's kind of interesting is that, like, every chapter should have a beginning, middle, and end. Every paragraph should have a beginning, middle, and end. And so, yeah, I think people can get overwhelmed by that. But I think the easiest and simple way out of that is to, what I always recommend people do, is go to the Amazon. And you know the way there's a, it's such a great tool. Like, you can see the first chapter usually and first the table of contents for free of so many different books. Look up your competing titles or books you really admire and just understand how the information is organized in those. It could be something as simple as chronological. It could be thematic. It could be super complex and then boil down. And yeah, don't, like, feel like you have to reinvent the wheel. Just take what's already working, but add your own, you and your own magic to it, because everyone has a book, because everyone has a unique perspective that is useful. Can you tell me a little bit more about your book? I'm really fascinated and curious.
Honestly, it's going to be about podcasting, and I'll be very frank with you. I have a fairly sardonic view of what is going on in the podcasting industry right now. I'm a contrarian when it comes down to it. I've been doing this for 13 years, and I've been watching and thinking, oh, I can write a book about it. I can write it. Yeah, I get to the end of it, and I never do it. There's always something else. I've got clients. I'm busy. You know, my agency is always very busy. It's no excuse. It's just me going, ugh, I'm scared, which I am. But the industry has blown up now in such a way that, and I'll be very honest with you and with my audience, I belong to a couple of really large podcast Facebook groups, and the amount of crap, garbage information that is touted in there, just, I'll never need a facelift. My eyebrows are constantly in my hairline. From What the heck? No, don't do that. So I'm writing a book that's a contrarian view of podcasting. It called as it's made out to be. In fact, I keep it simple, stupid. My entire attitude about podcasting is keep it simple, stupid. So there you go. And it's going to have attitude in it. It's got attitude.
Yeah.
You can probably tell.
Another really good tip is to maybe approach it, because you're such an amazing, or in your own words, brilliant social media manager, is you could do a weekly vlog, and then kind of take that as the rough draft basis for your book. There's a bunch of ways, because I think you're getting your home ahead because you're thinking, oh, this is a book, but you know you can do this. Like, if you can talk live in a podcast, which is so, I think, so much more difficult to, be interesting and...
Oh, really? I think it's easy because I have the best guests.
Oh, yeah. but then guest people for your book, we often do contributors in books, and it means there's more people to promote. For instance, one of the ways I would really recommend, if you want to be a USA Today bestselling author or a Wall Street Journal bestselling author, is I would say find a crew of 25 other people who are interested in the same thing. Each of you have a social media following of 5,000, and each of you be willing to post about it, let's say, 10 times on the week of launch. And then... it's not a guarantee, but that is one of the methods that, I think I would really recommend. And then you get that kind of reputational building. It's also a service we provide at Leaders Press, but, yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is, launching the book is, it should be part of your structure when you're getting ready to market this book. And sadly, so many people just kind of go backwards into it. They've got the book. They've finally figured out, am I going to try to find an agent, a publishing house? We're going to talk about that as well. Should I hire somebody like Leaders Press? And should I go ahead and self-publish? All of these decisions have to be made. Then they start writing. Then they start trying to find an editor, because everybody needs an editor or two or three. And, a lot of people don't go, well, no, I can do it. I can just put it up in Word, put it up on Kindle, and, I'm going to be rich and famous. No, you're not. You're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And look, I don't know about you. I read a ton of books on Kindle. Mm-hmm. And after I've read about the third or fourth typo, I'm out. I'm done. I'm very funny about that. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good the book is. If you can't spell, I have to go. It bugs me.
No. I'm with you.
There's just so many steps. And then all of a sudden you've got this book, you've got it printed, you've got 100 books in a box in your garage that the press made you buy, and now you don't know what to do because nobody's ever heard of it. So let's talk about getting that marketing piece done, or, getting some reputation built before you even try to get that book out there. I think it's important.
No, that's a great point. I mean, that's one of the things I love about working with Alinka, who is my boss. So I think it's rare to like your boss, but I actually do, because one of the things she brings is just kind of a very cold, hard eye to marketing. And I think I am much more similar to most people out there who are writing a book, who are like, my idea is so brilliant and I'll put so much research and effort into it that, it's going to be, like you say, a bestseller, and everyone's going to love it and I'm going to be rich. Whereas actually what you need to do from the very beginning, and I love that you mentioned this, is you need to do your market research. You need to find that kind of perfect Goldilocks spot of, yes, there are some competing titles, but no, it's not overwhelming. And because if you don't have any competing titles, it means there is
no interest. Nobody cares, but
exactly.
You and your mom, that's it. Your mom might read it. She may not.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, that would be depressing. Come on, Mom. And then, obviously, if there's too many, it's too competitive. And so you really have to think about that from the very beginning and who your audience is. I'm sure you know this as a podcast host, but, when someone tells you, oh, my podcast is for everyone, what that means straight away when I hear my book is for everyone is my book is for no one, because I haven't thought through who this is actually for and who will help, who I can help with it. And I think what really helps me as well, this might help you when you get like kind of that writer's block, is it's a very common piece of advice that is really useful. It's just think of that one friend who would really benefit and write for them, because then you don't lose your voice. And then, like, you're very aware of, like, who your market is, because I'm sure there's going to be other people, like your friend out there, who need this advice. I mean, it definitely sounds like the podcast industry there really is. And I'm kind of really curious, like, what do you think the solutions are for the issues in the podcast industry?
Oh, I'm sorry. Stop listening to people who have been podcasting for, 10 minutes. Seriously, they're out there, and they're experts, they say. And they drive me crazy.
Wow.
They really do. I'm going to have to tell this story because it still bugs me, and I think it was a couple of years ago. But there was this gentleman who put his wife's car. He was going to be a podcaster. I don't think he is, but I quit following after a while because my head hurt. I couldn't take it anymore. But this poor gentleman took his wife's car and put it in the driveway. I would have divorced him for that. And then he cleaned out the garage and he made it into a studio. Then he spent, I think it was around $4,000 on, guess what, equipment that was, told that he had to have by these alleged podcasters in these groups. And he never did share what his wife thought about it. He probably didn't dare, but I can take a wild guess, can't you? And God bless him. He spends all this money. Then, and this was the part that just had me going, oh, my God. He said, okay, now I need to make a podcast. What? Talk about starting from the very end of the process, kind of like we're talking about with the book. That was 2 years ago, and I'm still mad about it. So that's kind of do not listen to people. I hope your wife left you. I hope she took that car and drove off with him. But the thing is, if you're listening to people who have they don't know what they're talking about, and they're easy to spot because they don't have a podcast. They don't. Mine is 13 years old. I'm a bit of a subject matter expert, don't you think? I've been doing this for a long time, but you're following somebody who has not yet had a successful podcast, and these people say, now I need to find sponsors. Nobody's going to sponsor you. You don't have a track record. Same with books, I think. So, yeah, I have a contrarian view.
Yes. No, I love that. Honestly, that sounds like such a similar piece of advice. Like, in a way, you're saying, think of your audience from the beginning. And also, establish your reputation. The one key difference I would say maybe between podcasts and writing a book is there's almost a certain amount of respect that is given to the written word. Not that there isn't with a podcast. Sorry, I didn't mean to denigrate podcasts. But
no, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I think just in terms of writing a book can help establish that reputation and position you as an expert, which is, I don't know, something about the old black and white and the ink that and I think also just the fact that you do have to really do quite a bit of research for it to be a good book. Oh, also, this might be I just thought of another tip for writer's block that's quite a fun one, though maybe not the perfect one in the middle of the pandemic. But I have a friend who loves writing books on cruises because everything is taken care of for you. Like,
right.
They make your food, they make everything, and so you can just focus at, you've got the gym right there if you want to exercise, so you can just focus on, writing your book with no real-life distractions. And I don't think, not everyone maybe wants to go on a cruise, but I think there's an equivalent of that, like a cabin in the woods or, you know, that everyone can do.
I've actually seen people who I know and respect who have been on this podcast. I've read their books, and they'll say, listen, I fought all year long to take this 2 weeks off. And for people like you, people like me, people who are creatives, it's hard to take time off. We just don't do it. Mm-hmm. Our brains don't work that way. Mine doesn't. And for me to take 2 weeks off is frightening. It's like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it at the end of December. I deliberately took basically from Thanksgiving, well, a lot of Thanksgiving, but I took 2 weeks off in between Thanksgiving and December. And that first day I had to fight with myself, like, come on, do not touch your computer. Stay out of that room. I had to close my office door. My office is in my home. I figured if I bumped my nose on the door often enough, I'd get the message. But once I calmed down a bit, I started writing and I started thinking and I love what you said earlier. I started creating better structure. And
yes.
I'm ready to go. I mean, I'm not ready, but I have a much better sense of where I need to go now. And I'm not fighting
That's
with myself going, no, I'll do it later. I'm doing it now.
That's wonderful. I love to hear it. I'm so excited to read your book. That's, yeah. You already have your first reader lined up.
Thank you.
I think that's so true. Like, we think we can't give ourselves the time off because we think it's, like, wasted time. But actually, it helps your brain reset. And I'm sure there's got to be some science around that. And, like, really help you do deeper thought. And so it's so worthwhile. I read some statistic that, like, more creative people go for more walks or something, and I think it's linked to that thinking time again, right?
It is. I spend a lot of time out in the backyard underneath my pecan trees just standing there looking at them. You know, I go out there barefoot. I dig my toes into the dirt, mud, sleet, whatever's going on out there. And I just breathe, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there's that random thought that's been niggling. It shows up.
What type of plants did you say you had?
Oh, these are pecan trees.
Oh, pecan trees. Oh,
pecan
wow.
Trees, yeah.
I've never seen those. Are the pecans delicious? Do you make pecan pie?
No, I hate pecan pie. I hate sugar, but I have a good crop most years, but... This is a true story.
God,
I'll be standing there.
Give them to me.
Oh, yeah.
They're wasted on you.
No, I eat them. I have buckets of them. I eat them, you know, just alone.
Oh,
I don't fill
okay,
them.
Okay.
But it's not unusual to be standing out there bonked in the head with a, you know, a squirrel will say, get out of my yard, and it'll hit me in the head with a pecan. So life is interesting.
No way. That's adorable. I love squirrels. They're so cute.
They really are. So going back to structure, Grace, because I'm going to lose. You're so much fun to talk to. I'm going to lose track. But structure really is important. And the thing is,
yeah.
I mean, you have to write things down. And I wanted to ask you because you've mentioned it, and I've talked with other people about it. Look, I'm a computer science. I have a computer science degree. I go through 2 keyboards a year. I pound the bejeebers out of them. But I have found that if I take a pad and a pen and I start writing, you know, really writing, not pounding it into a document, it sticks with me better. Do you find that? Do you recommend that people just sit down and write it, or should they type, or whatever works for them? We're all different.
Yeah, we are all different, but I do think... And so there is a certain amount of, like, oh, just trial things out and see what works for you. But there is a certain amount of, like, it's great to just have a process that can... So I think stick with a process and try and make it work unless it's really not working for you, because sometimes you just need to bite the bullet. And, yeah, I think writing things out is great for that. Always keep it, like, the outline is the most important document, and that should be, like, a working document that you, like, add stuff to and move things around. I have a friend, so for structure, what he does, and I think it's quite useful, is he writes it all down on cue cards so that he can, like, move them around.
Yeah,
obviously,
cards a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's really great for structure because you could really see it clearly. Some people draw, it can help their 3D, their kind of thinking. Obviously, in the digital age, you know, a lot of people use the outline. Yeah, it really varies. Personally, I like to write it out by hand. I'm very old school that way and scan it in. So there's a bunch of different techniques, I would say.
So whatever works for you, but I'm guessing that consistency is really the key. And I'm not saying, you know, you have to block it out on your calendar, 2 p.m. every day. You're going to sit down and write for an hour. That's, your brain is going to go, no, I'm not. My brain does. It's like, you can't tell me what to do. You're not the boss of me. So that doesn't work for people like me. But I have found that if I write something every day, it can be 2 in the afternoon, it can be 2 in the morning. As long as I write something, I've got something to go back to and go, okay, that was more than a fleeting thought. Let's follow up with this. So consistency is important, isn't it?
Oh, God, consistency is everything. It might be worth, like, you talked about, like, hiring an editor and so on. It might be worth, even if you don't want to hire someone like Leaders Press who will do the whole book for you, which mightn't be right in your situation, hiring, like, someone like a project manager who can keep you on track, check in with you, hey, how far are you doing with the outline, and maybe organize those different moving parts for you. So otherwise you do, there's so much involved with the marketing, the editing, formatting, and so on, you know, coming up with the marketing materials, like the book cover, that can be hard to keep track of it all. I would really recommend Outsource Your Book, which is a great book that Leaves Press did on, like all the different parts that are involved and how to do it yourself, and it's got some great resources in there. What else would I recommend to help with that? A writing buddy is great for accountability. Like, I'm sure you have a bunch of friends who are in a very similar position who want to write a book, check in with each other, read stuff to each other. Did you hear about J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis? And they were called the Inkblotters, and they used to meet up every week in a pub and, like, read back what they had done that week to each other.
I've read that story. And I think, what was his name? There was another author group that did that. But what was his name? He killed himself. He had the cats, the polydactyl cats. Gosh. I can see his face.
Gosh.
Very famous writer. I'd hated his stuff, but very famous writer. It'll come to me. But anyway, he did the same thing. You know, he would get together in the pub, and they would all do kind of the same thing.
But what I think is hilarious about that is J.R.R. Tolkien told C.S. Lewis that he was totally talentless and that what he was doing was terrible and not to keep writing. But he obviously persisted. So I guess be careful with the friend you choose.
Well, you know, maybe having somebody tell you that you're bad at it just says, yeah, watch this. So who knows?
Yeah.
That would be interesting to find out if they were actually friends or frenemies or hated each other. What the heck?
Yeah.
Oh
my
God.
Hemingway.
Yes. I can see it. I've read his stuff. I can't believe that.
Like, he's one of those famous authors. You couldn't think of his name, but you knew he had a polydactyl cat. Priorities.
Well, and it's, you know, the things that stick with you. There's always going to be something fascinating about somebody that you just go, oh, that's how I identified them. With me, it was those cats and the fact that he, you know, he drank a lot and he would hang around with other authors in a pub.
You're right. Yeah, I guess it's kind of common, authors hanging out in pubs, now that I think about it, because all the beat poets do it. So maybe this isn't the advice we should be giving your listening audience.
No, don't get drunk.
Go out in a pub and you'll write a great work.
No,
stay sober.
Right,
right.
Okay, so let's go back to talking about, because this is important. We talked about this, Grace, at the top of the show. Your books can do so many things. It's not just something you want to print and give to your mama to put in her Christmas stocking for the grandkids because nobody else is going to read it. You can use your book as a lead generator. Listen, I have watched people, they create these small books, and they're great because we're busy. There's a small book, maybe 52 pages, And they use them largely as a business card. I mean, they use them as an introduction. So there's lead generation and there's lead conversation. So let's talk about all of those.
Oh, absolutely. So one of the authors who works with us, he now uses his book exactly like you say, instead of a business card. When he meets people, he hands over his book, and it's that amazing, it's an amazing ability to just immediately establish your reputation as an expert. And that's just from the sheer fact that you have put in the effort and so on to create a book. But then what I love about it is a lot of our authors, if you're a first-time author, you're still establishing that reputation. So a great way to make back your money and then some is to have a course or maybe you do mentoring or so on, that you then have a call to action incentive in the book. And so it's a free-to-download device, which it could be something as simple as a list of what to do, what not to do. Quite often our authors do that, to something more fun, like we had for one of our fiction books for children, it was like a make your own book stamp cutout, bookmark cutout that they could then decorate. And so it really varies on who your audience is and what you think would really add value to them. And then use that to gather email addresses of people who like really enjoyed your book and got something from it. And then offer them more value by because I know we're all desperate for really good content, right? So if you put that, a video of you discussing things in depth behind a paywall, or, I was even thinking for your book, it might be interesting for you to go through your podcast where you discuss these issues and take those transcripts and use that as inspiration. Or you could even, create a little webinar video course, or you could provide mentoring one-on-one. Those are all things that our authors have done as a way to make back their money. And then there's another type of nonfiction book, which we specialize in a lot, which is kind of a legacy piece or memoir. So for instance, Po Chung, who is one of the founders of DHL, he has this really interesting approach to business, which is very organic and very networking, but before, now we're all networks and scaling, and it seems so obvious, but in a pre-digital world, how to scale was not, and pushing things down the ladder and kind of empowering people in ownership was not as obvious. And so it's really, his book was really fascinating because it draws on all these different experiences and shows you that kind of different business idea. But he also does this kind of a memoir just for his kids. We have a surprising amount of authors who write a book for their kids to get to know them better because maybe they didn't know the business side of them, or to leave a piece for them, which I think is really beautiful. So, there's lead gen, obviously huge. A lot of authors will make their money back within the first year if they follow that advice of having an incentive. Establishing reputation is huge. And even just the process of writing a book, you will ask yourself questions, or if you do it with us, we'll ask you questions that will make you really reevaluate the choices you made. And a lot of our authors have said just the experience of understanding how they got to where they were, and all, and even just realizing how far they've come from when they started, was just so rewarding, and helps them be really grateful, I think, for what they've done. And so that process itself is super useful. So those are all great reasons to do it. To be honest, the reason that I think most of our authors write a book is because they want to help people. I think that's such an innate human quality. And I think, just think about the people you could help with your book and how much better off they would be if they knew how to avoid the kind of people who are kind of hucksters, or people who don't have the love for podcasting or just joining now because it's so lucrative and it's, becoming really popular, and how empowered they would feel to know how to keep it simple. Especially with there must be so many, I guess, I don't know how podcasters feel about YouTube, but there must be so many good podcast tutorials about the kind of equipment you need and so on, where you can literally visually see it. But are you guys like, ooh, stay away from YouTube as a podcaster?
Well, listen, I don't see anything wrong with YouTube. A lot of people are on there with their podcasts, but listen, for the first 10 years of this podcast, I used my telephone. That was it. That was my equipment. And my equipment now, I mean, I am really heavily in debt over this. I paid $19.99 to Amazon for a headset, and I've been using that for 3 years. That's it. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yep. Way less room for technical glitches to go wrong as well, if you understand your equipment. Or my friend is a photographer, and I asked him once, like, oh, what's the best camera? What should I get? And he was like, the best camera is the one you have with you. Like, if you have your smartphone with you.
Your
like,
phone.
I know we all want to think that, like it's the equipment that makes the photographer, because wouldn't that be great if we could just spend a ton of money on equipment and then suddenly, oh, wow, I'm amazing. But unfortunately, like you've so clearly pointed out, it's those years you've put in grafting that make you so good at what you do. And the best writers wrote on napkins with, you know, whatever pencil or paper they had around them. So unfortunately, there's no quick fix. It's just about putting the pen to paper, sitting with those blank pages. Of course, I'm sure you've tried this technique, but a lot of people say to just write anything that comes to your mind for the first 5 minutes to get over that that hump of kind of feeling overwhelmed when you're sitting at your blank keyboard. I don't know if that helps for you.
No, my mind is scary. You don't want to see what comes to your mind. It's a dark place in there. No. But I do, and I've shared this on the podcast many times, when I'm in the shower, that's when my best ideas come. And a lot of the notes that I have run back into my office to write down, part of that consistency thing, because I'm thinking about this book all the time. It is top of mind with me right now. And when I'm in the shower, everything ceases. My brain calms down. I calm down. Mm. It's hot enough in there to steam broccoli, so I'm relaxing. And I have learned to take, because I get my best ideas in there, no question. And I have learned to take bathtub crayons. I buy them at Amazon, bathtub crayons. And I, when a brilliant idea or a random thought or something I think is important, I scribble it on my bathroom wall, my shower wall. And when I come out and the steam clears, I take a picture of it with my iPhone. And then I come back in here and I write down what I think is really, really important, and I've got more parts of my book written. Does that make sense?
That is awesome. I love that you have, like, your process and you've worked in that and you figured out what works for you. Do you have, like, I got to ask, there's those little things where you can write in the shower. They've got, like, special pens and whiteboards. That would be genius.
I've seen them, but I already had the bathtub crayons, and I like the colors. It's the kid in me. I get to write. You know, some ideas get written in red. Some ideas get written in green. It really, if it's a money idea, it's in green. It really depends. I have a process.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But no, I haven't
That's
tried that.
That's awesome.
It works for me. So let's talk about now. I mean, we're going to build further authority with everything that you're sharing here. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier and what Alinka says, you know, marketing, marketing, marketing. If you're going to put out a book, you need to be starting about, you know, be thinking about getting that marketing piece first, I think. I mean, that's my attitude about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And so the really key parts for that are, well, I'm sure you know for podcasts as well, so the metadata is really important. So, well, the most important thing, I think, is a really good title, something that really captures what your book is about, that you can also always play in the subtitles. And this is the point where you can do some market research on keywords. There's a really great tool called Publisher Rocket for publishing. It's really not that expensive. You can find out what the keywords for your book title are and use some of those. But it's more important that it's just something that really stands out and really... you want it to... A good title is one that kind of forms a question in the reader's mind. Or a really great title is just a how-to, because readers love to find out how to do things. And then the cover is really, really essential. Even in this stage of Kindle books, I know we like to think, oh, covers aren't that important, but they still are.
Oh,
like, they're still... Mm-hmm.
If they're ugly, I'm not going to read the blurb. I'm just not. Beauty is important.
Well, I love it. Yeah, like, aesthetically pleasing, good design, like, don't, like, have a good hierarchy of typography. You should really, if you don't have a good graphic designer friend who you can call on for a favor, you should really get a proper graphic designer to do your cover. I mean, you could use someone on Fiverr so you don't have to spend too much, but you should get, like, someone who you like, who you've seen before, that kind of gets your style of book. And then, so that's really, really important. And again, I can't say stress enough to look at the competing titles, and you want something that's somewhat similar but not too different. Like, I always think of that episode of The Apprentice where, you know, they have to make their own advertisement and they just go off the wall. Like, they completely forget that, like, that they need to be fitting in with marketing trends. And you really do. I mean, I know if we're all like, oh, I'm a unique snowflake, I don't need to. But there's a reason that everyone else has been doing what they've been doing. But you can obviously put a spin in it. But the best, I think the best creativity happens when we are constrained, because then there's room to play in that. So, yeah, it's a really great title first, really great cover, good subtitle, killer book description. So you really need to, again, some people, instead of a book description, will put the praises from reputable people. So you have to network like crazy. Or, I mean, we actually have had some authors who managed to get some really good praises just through being like, hey, this is what my book's about. It's amazing. It's worth you taking a look at. It's very similar to your interest in X and Y that you wrote about in this article. Like, don't write to someone who is completely unrelated who will never reply. Like, really, do your research, your homework, why they would be interested in your book. And people are willing to help, but you are asking them to put their reputation to prove that you've done your homework and you're worth it. And those praises are really worthwhile. They're worth doing because you can put them in the editorial review section of Amazon, which will really kind of, again, it's all about building authority, building your expertise, building your reputation. And it's about saying, hey, look, I'm saying all these things, but you don't just have to trust me. Here's proof. Here's social proof. So
right.
That's super important too. And you can be doing that from the very beginning, identifying influencers, like micro book blogging influencers in your field. You can be doing that from the very beginning as soon as you have your book concept idea. And this might all seem unsexy, but your book doing well is very sexy, you know? And it's really worthwhile figuring this stuff out. Amazon ads are really useful. There's a bunch of book promotion sites out there that are actually quite good. BookBub is brilliant. There are some kind of services that will email thousands of librarians on your behalf, which I think is worth doing, because then your book could actually be stocked, you know, on a shelf and you can see it. So I guess that's one of... If you're wondering whether to self-publish, whether to hybrid publish, which is what we are, to go with traditional publishing, it's worth thinking about what's most important to you. So self-publishing, you get to keep all the royalties. Bingo, bango, amazing. It's probably the cheapest in terms of the only two professionals, I would say, if you want to really strip it back, is an editor. You should definitely get a copy editor who at least just checks, like you say, for typos and spellings. But maybe a developmental editor who can point out more major flaws.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's where the structure comes in.
Yeah, like if you've done a really good outline, then you might not need that. But Amazon, you need to keep your book below $9.99 to really benefit from the royalty structure, because once you go above $9.99, they charge a lot more. And then for hybrid publishers, so what we do is we do everything for you, the marketing, we interview you, we write the book, or we can just do the marketing if you've already written the book for yourself. And we can market it to be USA Today and Wall Street Journal bestseller, guaranteed. So if any of that is interest to you. And we also, what's nice about us, is we have a distribution deal with Simon & Schuster, which means that our books go onto bookshelves. So your book will be in your local bookstore. But then traditional publishers, I would say, is the one I would least recommend. I would much rather someone self-publish, because then you have such a fast proof of concept without having like sunk too much time or money into it. Whereas with a traditional publishing house, you do get paid to write the book. You get a tiny amount of the royalties. The royalties are only paid to you after they've recruited their cost, which is their marketing cost. It is incredibly hard to get them. They only take on a couple hundred every year authors. They're not going to, and even out of those authors, they're only going to push a few of those.
And you have to wait 2 years for the book to get out there. It's a long, long, horrible process.
2 years, a long, 2 years from when you sign the deal. Getting the deal in the first place, you have to get an agent. You have to pitch for years. You have to shop around and pitch. It's wonderful if you happen to stumble into it accidentally. The chances of that happening are slim to none. And otherwise, I think it's just the bar is too high for the world. No longer needs these traditional gatekeepers. We've realized that. We've evolved beyond that. We're like, no, the people who make art are the artists. And I think the world's a much better place for it.
Oh, I agree with you. I've got a client now who is just really, she really, really, really wants to go the traditional route. And I've been working with her and consulting with her and waiting for her to realize that that's not her best option. And she's getting there. She's like, 2 years? Yep. I told you that in the beginning. So she's really thinking about self-publishing. But, I can't force her into going in a different direction. She's had to figure that out on her own, because this book is important that she's written. She doesn't want to wait 2 years for it to get into colleges and to get into the parents of students. It needs to be out there now.
Like, how much will she have missed the moment, or
exactly.
How many people will she not have helped if it doesn't get out there in time? Like, we live in a world where time is so increasingly important, because the speed of stuff has increased so incredibly rapidly, of innovation and of information sharing. So don't hold back. I really hope she considers the self-publishing route. What's your book about?
Her book, she's an attorney, and she doesn't want to be an attorney forever and ever. Amen. But she has written this incredible book. But she's written this incredible book about how what parents don't understand about what their kids are going through, what's going on in school, how they can help them, be in school, stay in school, get out of school if that's what they want to do, how to not take on immense debt for your children. It's not your job, as far as I'm concerned. And, there's a lot of information that she's got in there, and it's all great stuff, and I think it needs to get out there right now.
That is incredible. She needs to get a lot out there. Imagine how many lives would be just absolutely altered for the better.
Exactly.
Even if she, she needs to do that. And it's a tough road. I mean, if she wants to go down the traditional route, I understand it. I think the problem is that's kind of our idea of it as a child, I think. And so we think, that's the way, if I want to publish a book, that's the way I have to do it. And it's not till, I started reading books by, let's say, Tim Ferriss or someone, that I realized, this whole self-publishing thing is legitimate. Like, there's people with actual useful information out there who just did it themselves, who were like, I think I'm good enough. Who decides me?
That's exactly right. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I first started speaking with her, and I hated to do it, but the first thing I told her, because she was telling me, I had the book outline, she sent it to me, I signed an NDA. You know, I knew what she was up to, and the first thing I had to say to her is, how about your marketing? She said, well, I don't have any. I said, you're already 2 years behind. And she just said, oh, my God. You have to tell the truth. So we're working on that, but she was already way behind the curve and didn't even know it, had no clue. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to go back to something you said earlier. You were talking about how important the title of the book is. And listen, these days I'm going to put on my web developer and marketing hat. You're probably going to build a web page for this book. You should, because this is where you can offer other things. If you've got a course, it's a marketing tool. But here's the thing. Pay attention to your SEO, your search engine optimization. If the search engines can't really read it or figure out what it is, humans aren't going to read it either. So you have to make it easy to read. And like you said, easy to understand, has a beginning and an end, a how-to or what if or whatever the heck it's going to be about. But keep in mind that your search engine optimization is going to be a big, big part of getting your book out there on top of everything else.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. That's what the keyword research will really help you. And again, front load your book description if that's what you're going to use. If you're not going to use the praises, which is totally relevant, or totally valid, I mean, sorry. Yeah. Absolutely. Keyword optimization. The tool is Publisher Rocket. I'd really recommend it for anyone in the publishing industry. It really has the most up-to-date on Amazon, which, like or loathe Amazon, I know people have a lot of opinions on it. It is just the biggest marketplace for English language books. So you just have to be aware of it and how you're going to sell them it if that's the route you're going.
That's exactly right. And we were talking earlier. I just lost my train of thought. My feet got cold. It's 28 degrees outside, which is unusual for my part of the deep south. And all of a sudden, I just realized that my feet are really cold. But we were talking.
It's a little bit chilly here in Lisbon, and I'm struggling too because it's usually so warm.
I know. It's just, I love this kind of weather, but I probably should put some socks on. I don't think I even own any, which is neither here nor there. But listen, we were talking about, you know, the book covers. And even if it's on Amazon and you're going to download it on Kindle, and listen, I download probably 5 or 6 books a day. They're mostly free.
Wow.
You ought to see. I've got over 6,000 titles on my Kindle. I've got 4,000 physical books in my house. And in my garage, I read. But here's the thing. If you're going to do this, make sure that whoever creates your book, and I know you've got something to say about this, makes it that so you've got a spine. Listen, all of my books in my office right now, and this book that you sent me, Awakening by Areva Martin, is going to go in here as well. I've got 2 bookshelves, and every single book in here was gifted to me by my podcast guests. I have to be able to read the spine to figure out which one I'm looking for again. And in the early days of self-publishing, and I've got books that go kind of way back, I'm like, what the heck was this book about? And I have to yank it out and read it because the spine was so awful. Not something you normally think about, right? But it's important because look how we stack these books, or we stand them up, we stack them. That spine is, to me, almost the most important part of a physical book.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because it's funny how many different moving parts people don't even realize is part of the book creation process. Like, for instance, you have to figure out how many pages are in your formatted manuscript and alter your book cover to be the right size, or Amazon will reject it. That's why I do recommend, for that part of the process, at least getting a professional graphic designer who has experience in book covers, because like you say, there are things to take into account that you just wouldn't realize. Obviously, also just remember to get this might seem obvious, but your own ISBN, because your book will get rejected without it. It might be worth considering get the Library Congress number as well for your book, but that is very straightforward and easy, but just there's so many different moving parts. It's just, yeah, it is good to have someone, I think, to talk to about it. And you will make mistakes, and that's fine. Everyone does.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, when I started my multiple books here, that epic blank page is like, oh, geez, because it is daunting. And what we're talking about is probably just scaring the bejeebers out of people, but I don't think it should be. I think it should be really helpful to people. It's like, this is where you can go. This is what you can do. People publish their own books all the time. They go to people like you, Leader Press, who can help with these books. You know, you can either hire somebody, you can do a hybrid. There are so many ways to get your word out. You were talking about blog posts. One of a very dear friend of mine is Jim Tunney. He's known in the United States as the dean of NFL referees. And he's written, I think, and I do all of his social media, but he's written, I think, 9 or 10 books that basically were from his blog. He writes an article every week. He's got something like 600 articles. They're all in books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very smart way of doing it.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a great way of doing it. I mean, the only thing is you still need that outlet.
Oh, I lost you. You still there? Oh, no. Grace, can you hear me? Oh, shoot. Well, we are just about 3 minutes out from... Oh, shoot. We lost her. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye because we've only got about 2 more minutes anyway. So, Grace, thank you. It has been wonderful speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the terrific tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And because she's not here to share it, go find Leaders Press and find out more about, you know, how to meet the publishing needs and how they help you. And just figure out if this is the kind of service you want. Find out what kind of information they can share with you. And listen, Grace, thank you so much. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. And just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you, Grace.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.